This is WTIC's Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel and Dennis Halnan of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and Dennis by phone at 860-522-9842 or email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com. Get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here are Eric and Dennis on WTIC News Talk 1080.
This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we're going to be here till 11 o'clock, and we have one line open for you. We thank you guys for getting on lines, 860-522-9842, and we'll get to your calls really quickly. But we want to ask Ziggy a question. Hey, Ziggy, are you familiar with the U.S. government, how they're going to allow private companies to carry out cyber attacks on its behalf? Why does it ribbit? Hey, Ziggy. Are you aware that the U.S. government is going to allow private companies to carry out cyber attacks on its behalf?
Yes. The Trump administration signed a memorandum letting vetted U.S. firms conduct government-sanctioned cyber operations against foreign criminal groups under strict federal oversight and without targeting governments or causing loss of life.
So this is a pretty big story.
Yeah.
On first blush, I haven't thought about it too much. I like the idea. There is so many scammers out there, and if you look at some of the scamming, the counterattacks that are happening on these by these YouTube channels, Scammer Payback and other guys are out there literally doing this, making money by posting and showing what they're doing to the bad guys. Having sanctioned private companies like security companies being able to go after these people might, and you know, make some money off doing it, fine by me, to take them down feels right to me. It feels like we just sit back and let these people take advantage of us constantly. I think I read recently that the biggest gross domestic product, I think, is Cambodia, is scamming.
Wow.
Right? And I just posted a thing from the Wall Street Journal how the North Koreans are making like $1 billion a year putting in fake employees into our companies.
Right.
So we just sit back and kind of take it, you know, thank you, may I have another. And I think allowing private companies, especially security companies, you know, imagine the firewall companies or even the software companies out there making some cash, going after and taking down these criminals. I think it's a good idea. Now, what could go wrong? Well, all sorts of things could go wrong. But you know, it's like having it feels like a bug bounty, right? So you have private companies and private individuals that have bug bounties to help IT companies find problems with their software. Now you have a bounty where you can take out, you know, sextortion rings and ransomware gangs and whoever is attacking us, and maybe make some cash, have, you know, submit a bill to the U.S. government for your services. Feels right to me. I'm sure I'm not thinking this through completely, but we are just getting hammered by these people, and it's about time, because we can't expect the government to do it all. And heck, they're shutting down all the time. So poor CISA, they're always shut down because of whatever political football they're doing. Allowing a private company to continue to fight the battle while the government dithers makes sense to me. But maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? I'm not the sharpest tack in the drawer. Let's go to Greg in Naugatuck. What's going on, Greg?
Thanks for taking my call, guys. I have a newer computer. It's fast. It's good. No problem. Windows 11.
I just bragging.
But when I go on Facebook, only Facebook, and let's say there's a post that I want to make a comment on, and then I go to type, let's say it's just the word the. I hit T. It takes 2 seconds to several seconds before the T will even appear, and then H, 2 more seconds before the H appears, et cetera. And some days it's faster than others, but in other words, it takes a long time for me to just type in a couple of words. And I'm, you know, and I did a Google search on that, but I don't know what I'm doing with computers. So I'm just wondering if you got any thoughts on what could be slowing down my reactions on Facebook only.
All right. What I was going to ask you is what, number one, what browser are you using? And number two, do you have an ad blocker?
I do have an ad blocker.
Okay.
And I am using Firefox.
Okay. You might want to start by putting in an exception for Facebook in your ad blocker.
Okay, or I can turn it right off when I get to it. I mean, I don't even know how to do an exception. But
well, you would the easiest way to go would be to get to Facebook and then click the button to turn off the ad blocker for that.
Yep, I can do that. I know how to do that.
And if it turns out that that's the problem, then what's happening is it's part of the scripting that goes on with the ad blocker, you know, determining what there is on the screen and doing its work and causing the browser itself to hang. In that case, the solution would be to switch ad blockers or maybe use a different browser altogether for Facebook. And I'm thinking something like Brave. Because it has ad blocking, but it's built into the application so that anything that it's doing while it's rendering the site is going to be happening in real time instead of an extension, which is actually a separate program, talking to Firefox, which is your original browser, and then passing information back and forth to each other, which is probably what's bottling up your typing.
When I'm on Facebook, could I just do it simply by going up and disabling my ad blocker while I'm on Facebook?
That would definitely be the quickest way to go.
Basic way.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I'm not on it now. When I do it on my smartphone, go to Facebook. No trouble. But it's just on my laptop. So I'm going to give that a try, because I didn't see anything about that before, and I do appreciate your help.
Our pleasure. All right.
Keep it up, guys. Half of the time, I don't know what you're talking about, but half of the sometimes I do, and it's a great show.
Well, thank you. And be careful what you post on Facebook, because it can come back to haunt you.
I put comments out that I could care less. You know, I always get returns on. But anyway,
all right.
Thanks, guys. You have a great day.
You too.
Keep it up.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you just never know what can haunt you on Facebook. And, you know, saying things like you hate Thanksgiving can bite you in the hiney. Let's go to Joe in Berlin. Who hates Thanksgiving?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, good morning.
I've got a question here. I've got two computers. One is running QuickBooks, but it's not online.
Okay.
I don't want to update it.
Oh, you want to keep it as is.
Okay. It works just fine.
Yep.
And I'm happy with it.
Yep.
I also have Excel on the same computer.
Okay.
But every time I start, it wants to know my product key.
Every time you do what? You're cutting in and out.
Every time I start Excel, I open up Excel.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It wants the product.
Gotcha. It wants the product.
And
key.
I have no idea what. Because I did this online. I got the three, I signed up for three whatever uses of Excel.
Yeah.
How do I? I'm just leery. All I do is I have a key, and then it's tells me to go online, and I cancel and running.
Right, you
I'm
don't
just a little.
You're leery.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, are you leery about? You're worried about QuickBooks updating on you and breaking? Is that what you're worried about? Because you kind of led with that.
Yes. But I need Excel on this computer.
Right.
Work with because I have information and I just get a file from
your data. Right.
Other.
Yeah. So Microsoft wants to kind of have its software check in and confirm that the key you're using is legit. Lots of piracy occurred in the early 2000s, 90s. Microsoft used kind of a good faith. They just assumed nobody would steal their stuff, even though that's how they started. No, I'm just kidding. Their keys, you've got your key out there, and they want to make sure that key isn't used somewhere else. And That's what they're trying to do. So I would tell you that if you don't have QuickBooks up and running, just bringing up and connecting for an internet connection to allow for Excel to kind of prove it's legit should stop that from occurring over and over again. And then you can disconnect it from the internet. Now, how, when you say it's not on the internet, is it physically not wired? Or is it just standalone?
I unplugged it.
Yeah.
The Ethernet cable. I just unplugged it from the back of the
Your air gapped, as it were. So yeah, I mean, I would tell you that you probably don't have to worry about your QuickBooks updating on you because you connect your computer to the internet and let Excel do its thing. It's only most software is going to at least say, hey, would you like to update or force the update or recommend the update? And if the software is not running, it shouldn't even ask. Right. So,
okay.
I think you'd be safe enough to plug it in, bring up Excel, have it do its little check-in, and then you can disconnect it after it does its check-in and see if that problem goes away.
Okay.
So
I'll do that and see what happens.
All right, David.
And another quick question. If you can post a link on what's the safest way for me to clean up my C drive?
Don't do it. It's the safest way. What do you want to clean it up for?
Yeah.
Because it says it's full. But I don't save any information to it.
All right.
And
well, that's a fair reason. There's definitely some simple built-in tools that'll delete basic temp files and stuff like that for you to give you that basic cleanup. It's a hard disk utility you're going to run, and Dennis can give you a link. Is it running Windows 11, I assume?
No, that one is running 10.
Okay, same idea.
It'll be the same.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty simple to do. But if you're, just for everybody else, if your disk isn't full, there is no reason.
Leave it alone.
Just leave it alone. Do something other, you know, like clean the garage, paint the house. Don't clean your C drive if it's fine. You got better things to do.
Well, I got to paint the bathroom.
So, okay. Yeah, see? There you go. All right, Joe.
Thank you.
You got it.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. The thing about computer maintenance these days is it was an issue in the 90s and the 2000s when we didn't have a lot of storage and
Well, you had to manage it. Virtually every computer in the world was running right on the edge of what it was capable of because storage was at a premium.
Yeah.
Memory was at a premium. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're right. We don't have that anymore.
No. Everything's at a premium only because of the data centers right now, but there's much larger capacities.
Right. So. And there's also one form of computer maintenance that you never, ever want to do on a modern computer, which is defragmentation.
Right.
Because modern computers now have SSDs, mm-hmm. and you do not want to defragment them. There is literally no benefit ever to doing it.
Right.
So
just on an SSD.
On an SSD. So you just don't do it. But since Windows 7
mm-hmm.
will recognize SSD and will not defragment it. And then everything else since then is the same.
You're going as fast as you can,
yep.
as it is. All right, so possibly let's take a quick break here, and then we'll get to David. And three lines open for you, 860-522-9842 is the number. All right, that's what she said. I guess that's who we are. We're going to be here until 11. And then Morgan, Mr. Radio, will have some sort of spotlight on something.
Yep.
It's pretty cool, actually. I listened to the last, I think it was his last show, and I was driving home from the station, and that the guy was talking about the music archives.
Oh, yes.
I mean, amazing.
Yeah, and they're relocating from New York City to Ridgefield.
Yeah, very interesting story. Yeah. So stay tuned. Morgan will have something cool. As always, I hope. Don't let me down, Morgan. No, I'm sure he will at 11 o'clock, so stick around for that today. Let's get to your calls, though, and we're going to go to David in Farmington next. What's happening, David?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
A question. I'm guessing you've answered this many times, and I joined the show late, so hopefully you didn't have the same question this morning. I've got a couple HP laptops in the house, only a few years old. Got them at Best Buy's, and they came with, you know, I don't know if they came preloaded with Norton and McAfee, but they had Trend Micro, which at the time Best Buy's was offering one of these 6-month free things if you gave them the credit card, and it would auto renew and stuff. And I've had that for internet security antivirus, but mm-hmm. and I haven't really had any problems per se with it. But I'm just wondering, I'm probably going to step away from that. Are there are there you know, suites of these services out there that you would recommend, whether you know you're paying for them or they're free, or what's kind of the best thing to go with if you want to protect a couple laptops?
Yep.
This even crosses over into our phones and stuff like that.
Well, sure. So, I mean, our best recommendation that we've been giving for multiple decades now, and I've never received a phone call of complaint from any of you in the out in the listening audience, has been to not pay for antivirus. Let it come free with the operating system, Windows Defender. It's free. Microsoft bought an AV company called Dice many years ago. And if you pair that with configuring your firewall to use OpenDNS, it's a safer internet experience, you should be in good shape. And it's free, quote unquote. I mean, you still have Microsoft, but it's free. And that's the way we'd recommend it. You don't need to do anything with these security products anymore. For the home user, businesses, big difference. But home users, you're fine there. And then incorporate a VPN if you want to have your usage on these machines more secure when you're on banking systems or what have you. It's just good to start getting in the habit of incorporating a VPN into your life. We've recommended that, and they're free. And then incorporate an encrypted email service into your life, like a Proton. If you use Proton email, it's encrypted point to point, and even Proton themselves can't break the encryptions. So no one or entity or body can get into your email without you being asked specifically. And those are things I'd recommend.
All right. Yeah. We've got Proton nice. Email. So we're doing okay. that. But so Windows Defender is really
it's all you need.
Satisfactory.
Yeah. As long as you're running OpenDNS.
Right.
Okay.
Do you have that going yet, David?
No. What's the process for OpenDNS?
We've got a
process for doing it.
It's not a big deal.
We'll post it on the website and on Facebook.
And that's okay. Also free. It's a Cisco product.
Okay.
All right.
All right. How about on the phone side? I mean,
if you configure OpenDNS on your home router, all of your devices on Wi-Fi will be protected by OpenDNS.
By default,
yes.
And the operating systems these days are so good, you shouldn't have to worry. So we had a hard break here. Hope that helps you, David.
Okay. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks very much.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Yep.
All right. We are back here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online on this lovely Saturday morning in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And we appreciate your calls. And let's get right to them. We're going to go to Linda in Wethersfield next. What's happening, Linda?
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. My son, he's a senior in college, and he's starting a business on the side. And it involves photography and editing. He uses DaVinci software.
Okay.
So the computer he had, which was great for college, wasn't big enough and strong enough for him to do all the editing and everything that he does for videos and things like that. So he got a new, I guess it was a Dell, some kind of a gaming laptop that could handle more of what he does with the graphics.
Yeah.
And he's going to be taking that to school. And it was a significant investment for him. He had to save up a lot of money for it. And what I talked to him about is a little bit about my concern for both physical and data security while he's away at school for that particular laptop. I mean, he still has this one for his classes that he'll take to class, but is there anything that he can do to protect this thing? Like, if it got stolen, to be able to track it or trace it, and is there any additional security he should be thinking about?
Yeah, so great.
On this other than...
Yeah, great question. So data security, that's the BitLocker we talked about earlier in the show, and that's probably turned on by default. If not, make sure he turns it on.
Okay.
And then there is Find My PC software built into Microsoft that you can utilize. Basically, it only works though when the bad guy turns on the machine.
Well, yeah. If it's off, there's no way to reach it. Yeah.
There's no like you're not gonna like tape on a tracking device like a, what are those little things from Apple? Those little.
Like an AirTag or something?
Yeah, you're not going to AirTag it unless you put it in the actual laptop bag and then the bad guy takes the laptop bag and then you can track it that way.
Yeah.
You can AirTag it. Those are really the only three ways, but the bad guy has to turn on the machine for it to be seen so that you know where your laptop is. There's third-party products called Prey that are out there too. that you can put on machines to track their locations. Again, only when the bad guy turns it on.
So, I think I understand this. I just made a confirmation that, so if he's storing all of his data on, like, whether it's a OneDrive or Google Drive or wherever he's got it stored and backed up,
yep.
If somebody stole that, all of his data would be secure on that OneDrive, so that really all he's worried about is the physical piece of machinery that's been stolen, right?
Yep. If he's got a backup, that's true. Most of the data that ever is lost is because they hack into the OneDrive or the Google Drive and take it that way.
Yeah.
Not that that's going to happen to him. You can also invest in a data cable. Like he can actually lock his laptop physically to the desk by using kind of it's almost like like a bike chain that you can get him for laptops. And you can do that too, because if he's going to leave it out in the dorm room, never know. You don't want it to walk.
Yeah. Especially, it amazed me how much. So the reason he also went that way was because, he's doing some drone work, and if you went back a year ago to like memory cards, they were pretty dirt cheap.
Yeah.
And he just wanted to buy some, and they are very, very expensive.
It's nuts. It's nuts right now. It's crazy.
It is. Yeah. So this kind of served a couple purposes for him. Okay. So you've helped me a lot. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Linda.
Have a great day.
Right. Yep. Bye-bye. All right. So good thought there. As far as protecting data, hey, Ziggy. Can you let people know about California's drop tool?
California's drop, delete request, and opt-out platform lets residents submit one free request to over 600 data brokers to delete and stop selling their personal information. It launched January 1st, 2026, and brokers must begin processing requests by August 1st, 2026, typically reducing spam and improving privacy.
What's the penalty for data brokers who don't follow the drop tool?
Data brokers that fail to process drop requests face a $200 fine for each unprocessed request per day, with no overall cap. That exposure can quickly reach billions. For example, 260,000 pending requests could mean $1.5 billion in liability daily.
Well, that's pretty serious. So California seems to be trying to protect their residents' data. Hey, Ziggy, does Connecticut have anything like that?
Yes, Connecticut has a similar system. Its 2026 Data Privacy Act requires data brokers to register starting January 1st, 2027, and to use a state-run deletion portal launching July 1st, 2028, checking it every 45 days. Noncompliance can incur $200 per day fines. Want to know how to prepare for Connecticut's deletion portal when it launches in 2028?
No, Ziggy, because, again, we were also promised the ability to put our licenses into our phones long ago, thanks to the DMV. So I'm not going to hold my breath on this one in Connecticut.
I get it. Your phone license hopes haven't materialized yet, and Connecticut's portal still relies on the actual driver's license number for verification.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. But it's good that we're thinking about it here in Connecticut. Thinking about it and doing it is another thing. In other news I wanted to bring up, this is kind of cool. Samsung has a similar thing they're working on, but Google's newest Pixel Watch can monitor your blood pressure and insulin resistance. How's that, Dennis?
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of a holy grail here as far as insulin, too. I've always thought that...
The Pixel Watch 5 adds Health Guardian, letting it track blood pressure trends and non-invasive insulin resistance signals from wrist sensors, delivering monthly metabolic insights.
So when I don't ask Ziggy to say something, he does. But when I do ask him, he ribbits.
Thanks for telling me.
You just never know. So this is really great stuff when it comes to the newest watches that are out there. And the technology is pretty cool to be able to have your watch monitor this stuff. And as we get further and further along, insulin resistance, blood pressure, knowing you're having an issue, cuffless blood pressure monitoring, my goodness, it's the coolest thing, right?
Yeah.
So the technology's coming and it's coming fast. And despite Ziggy jumping in on me, I'm excited about it. Not that I have a lot of health issues per se, but as we get older, right, it's one of those things that can kind of help you know kind of where you stand. And insulin resistance is definitely an issue these days with a lot of folks. I know I remember Ray talking about prediabetes all the time on his program. And for me, insulin resistance was always my ability to see my toes or not if I was standing up. And the better chance if you can see your toes, the better chance you don't have insulin resistance. But now you actually have a actual wearable that's going to work on this for you. So Google's coming up with it. I know Samsung is working on it too. So This is kind of cool technology. I don't know what Apple does. Do you have an Apple Watch?
I do not.
Yeah, you know, okay. I mean, Carolyn probably knows because she's an Apple devotee. Do you have any medical things going on your Apple Watch there, Carolyn?
I thought you were about to call me an Apple diva, and I was like, No, I don't have one either, but I do know I've heard stories where it'll pull people. They're like, oh, hey, your heart beats, or your heart rate's really going crazy, and then it's, oh, it turns out I was having a heart attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was actually at a rehearsal one night, and a fellow player next to me noticed her heart rate was just going crazy, and she was having a panic attack. And the Apple Watch had to tell her, hey, by the way, your heart rate's going crazy, like she didn't know.
Yeah, right.
But it's pretty amazing what these wearables can do. So all good, all moving forward. Anything else you want to bring up, Dennis?
Well, sure. There was it looks like there was a crime that took place it involved ChatGPT.
Oh, boy.
This teenager in Massachusetts has been charged with killing his mother and brother.
Oof.
After having conferred with ChatGPT about how to go about it.
Oh, my gosh.
And apparently he got around ChatGPT's own guardrails by discussing it as if it were some kind of a fantasy that he was ginning up.
So there's no guardrails to creepy fantasies?
No.
Apparently
not. Not in ChatGPT.
So it doesn't sound like a very good guardrail.
No.
So
it's very, I mean, this is just another example of, you know, how things go very terribly wrong very quickly because we don't think out the ramifications of stuff before we make them available.
It's crazy.
And we don't know all the different ways that people are going to take advantage of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Enough testing to know.
We talked about the kids getting around age verification by putting mustaches on their faces, remember?
Literally.
We weren't making it up. That's sad. We'll put a link up there to that story as well, but there's a lot of work that has to be done in those guardrails. That shouldn't be a thing that you can do that. I mean, Dateline's enough as it is, right? My wife and I are like, okay, how are we going to off each other? And I was like, Dateline will tell us. I'm just joking. It's right there. It's crazy. We're going to put the links to these stories and more. And feel free to get back to your calls when you get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. We'll be right back. In the home stretch, as it were, everything's been posted over at computertalkwithtab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. And Dennis does it during the show.
Yeah. So. And of course, Mike G is posting them all to our Facebook group.
Yep. Computer Talk with Tab Listener Network. If you want to join, just ask. And if you're not a crackpot, we'll let you in. I actually had to decline a few.
Had some weird requests coming in.
Yeah. So we check. We try to make sure. We try to vet out who is getting into our group. And so far, so good.
Yeah. It kind of confirms that we need to have these particular guardrails on our group.
Right. Because, again, we don't want anybody selling you anything driving you nuts.
A couple of those look really weird.
Very weird. Oh, I just joined Facebook today. I'd like to be part of your group. Oh, really? No, thank you.
How convenient for you.
Yeah. So we try to vet these people. Sort of. I mean, we don't do a background check on everybody getting in there, but we just kind of look at your, you know, how long you've been around, how many other groups you've been in, you know, the attenda, who knows what as far as your posts go, how you're in trouble with other groups, stuff like that. And of course, if you follow us on X at Tab Computer Sys, all these stories get to you as well, because we'd rather you not Google it
because if you Google it, you're going to find out you're going to hit the wrong place. You're going to end up at some dark corner of the interwebs and download something malicious on your computer. So it's really, it's one of the most important things these days is we do not want you to try to Google what we're talking about and finding something. We'll give you at least a link that we know is safe. You can go Googling from there if you want, yeah. But at least you know the link we're going to try to provide you is safe in general. I mean, it may not stay safe. That's the other problem with these links. You never know, but we try to make sure the links we're sending you are always safe.
We've dealt with this at Tab. Mm-hmm. We've had clients that need like QuickBooks installed on their computers.
Yeah.
And they go and Google it and they install it. And then what they installed is very weird or no good.
Yeah.
And we get the calls and we have to tell them, you know, break the news that you installed some kind of, you know,
malicious stuff.
In one case, it was actually QuickBooks, but it just had some kind of an add-on or something that was telling them that they needed to renew their license and to call this phone number.
There it is. The moment you call the phone number.
And the person who had seen that said, you know, we had a license for this. We didn't think it would need to be renewed.
Yeah.
And that was what triggered the phone call to us to see what was going on. But that's where this happens. And it happens a lot.
Yeah. I just read a story, too. I saw it, I think it was in the New York Post, where a Connecticut elderly Connecticut woman was scammed out of $600,000 because she got some sort of message on her computer that she was doing something, you know, illegal. And then, of course, moments later, the bad guys call her as if they're from the police, because you can spoof a number. Spoofing a number is just like when you send a letter and you put it in the U.S. mail. The return address can be anything you want to put on it, right? You can put you're writing it from whatever you want to put on it. Same thing happens with phone numbers. They can spoof police department numbers, and they convinced this lady that she had somehow done something illegal, and she found herself giving the bad guys, this guy was out of Brooklyn, I think, New York, $600,000. So, again, we keep telling you, assume anybody reaching out to you is a scam. Even the legit emails. My son got a text from Comcast. He canceled his Comcast service, and they sent him a text. How would you like your payment? This way, that way, or this way? I'm like, I don't trust that. Don't believe that. You know, reach out, call yourself to see if this is a scam. I mean, Comcast shouldn't be using those types of methods. You know, when I cancel your service, just send me a check, for crying out loud. Don't give me some sort of text asking me how I want my money. Just send me my money. Right? Why does it have to be some sort of back and forth communication that requires me to wonder or not whether this is legit? It was legit, but come on. Would you like us to do a direct deposit into your bank account? No. Just send me a check, right?
Just send a check or just do the direct deposit. Why are you stopping to ask? And why didn't you arrange that
originally
when you set up the cancellation in the first place?
Exactly. I mean,
these are follow-up questions that could have been resolved, you know, beforehand.
It was kind of funny, too. He was trying to cancel the service, and they're like, why? I mean, it was almost like AOL, where they were, like, giving him a hard time for canceling. He's literally leaving the service area, right? And why are you canceling the service? You know, it's like they wouldn't let him do it, and then they're trying to sell him a cell phone number, and it's like, look, I just want to cancel the service. I'm not going to need it because I'm using GoNetSpeed where I'm going to, right? So, but getting those texts and getting those reach outs is definitely, you just got to assume they're all scams, whether it's a phone call coming to you out of the blue, whether it's a email, even letters. I would still recommend you go on your own, not using the information they sent you, to confirm it's legit, because you almost can't believe anything these days. Anything you want to bring up, Dennis, before we're out of here and we hand it over to Morgan?
We had another story about a service that is that works with pet feeders. What you do is you have a pet feeder, you fill it with some food, and on a schedule, whatever schedule you want, it, you know, drops a certain amount of food for your pet.
Okay.
If you're away from home, it's really good because you can feed them while you're away. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great idea.
Sure it
does. Well, this company that sold them had an outage.
Oh no. And the pets died?
We don't know that any pets died.
But they stopped feeding the pets.
The outage was only for part of a day.
Okay.
So it was not a long-term thing, although there are some reports of lingering issues with particular devices.
Oh, no.
Here's my thing.
Yeah.
You have an outage that blocks me from getting my email. Okay. That's inconvenient. It's not ideal. It's not a great situation, but really, is there any harm done if I can't get my email for a day?
No.
Probably not.
No.
But when you mess with the animals.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, the thing is, you just set the schedule, right? You set the schedule and there's not enough RAM on your little pet feeder to have it remember a week's worth of schedule. Well, you need to be IoT and connect to the cloud every 5 seconds.
That's actually part of the story.
Yeah.
Because according to the company that made them, the devices have local memory.
Yeah.
And they do remember whatever schedule they had last, whatever that is.
Okay.
So it's in communication with their cloud, but it should be retaining a local schedule and it should maintain that.
Right. The last instruction.
Whatever was the last synchronization that took place, it should be honoring that.
Okay.
Now, the problem here is that there are pet owners that have reported that they definitely were still not working even in that case.
Oh, boy.
But there are other owners of these devices who said, yeah, they did keep working.
Okay, good.
You know, according to the local schedule. So it looks like things are a little dicey.
Yeah.
It's possible that maybe some of the devices are just better at maintaining their local schedules than others.
And that's the way it all should work. If you're off the internet.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. You shouldn't need to have your garage door talk to the internet before it opens. You should be able to talk to your phone, which via Bluetooth or via your local internal Wi-Fi to say, oh, you're here. I see your IP address locally. I don't need to talk to the interwebs to open the door. I mean, we're just too smart for our own good sometimes. So that's good news, Dennis. I mean.
Well. Ideally, it should work the way the company says it works.
Yeah.
But there were definitely people reporting issues. So there was a problem.
There's some dead guppies out there.
No dead guppies.
Well, we want to thank all you guys for joining us on this Saturday morning. We want to thank Carolyn for producing, as always, and Mike G for posting everything over to our Facebook page and to our X feed, so you guys don't have to Google it. And of course, Dennis posts everything live over at computertalkwithtab.com. Subscribe to our podcast, the Odyssey podcast. Use the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Feel free to subscribe. We'd really appreciate it. We don't get a penny for it or anything for it other than a little bit of pride that you downloaded our podcast, and we less love that.
Yeah, who doesn't?
And you know, and the fact that we know you'll be listening to hours and hours and hours and hours and hours.
Remember, we want you to be geeks too.
See you next Saturday.